That must be one big-ass bowl of cereal, all I know.
I ain't going to tell Tara. You just said you she had a big ass.
What?
Ew. It's sugar-free, isn't it?
Actually, remember when I said how you were sweet when you're not picking on me? Could you be sweet
but
today?
Where's the fun in that?
And then we spoke to some real nutters.
Okay, wait a minute. Now I got to ask a question.
Yes,
here.
Ma'am.
Uncle Lou.
Yes, ma'am.
Is today your birthday?
Not on Facebook, it is.
Ooh, you bitch.
The hard part is trying to get her to sit still inside that pentagram.
What time did you call this young lady? We've been worried sick. You're grounded.
Oh, bullshit. It's early.
Oh, so it's Bill Cosby's fault.
Yeah, I think Michael Jackson might have been involved, too.
K9, is there any way that you can, like, permanently adjust that that connection there for his Skype?
Negative.
Oh, dang it. Well, maybe you can look into that while we talk to our guests. How about that, K9?
Negative.
Thank you, K9. You're just as cheeky as your master.
Oh.
You know, it's bad when you get put down by the robot dog.
You're listening to the Happiness Patrol.
Hello, 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 hello. Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to the Happiness Patrol. My name is Lewis B. Golly, you know what? This week is a special week for us here on the Happiness Patrol because not only is Gallifrey 1 happening in L.A. at the end of this week, so by the time you actually hear it, it'll be like maybe just a day or so before the one of the biggest and most popular Doctor Who conventions in the U.S. is going to occur. But also, we've got guests. We've got guests! Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce these guys. We have Anthony and Jessica joining us. Say hello, Anthony.
Hello.
And Jessica.
How are you?
Good, good. And also Christine Larson.
Hello.
Dr. Christine Larson. And she does not, she's not a vet, just to let you know, she is not a vet.
I could save so much money if I were a vet. I could take care of my own animals.
But you're a theoretical physicist, so technically you could just go back in time and make yourself a vet.
That's right. And Dale. Hey, Dale. Welcome.
Hello.
And Leela.
Hey.
And the wonderful Miss Tara Wheeler.
Howdy.
Hey, Tara. So our guests join us today because they are editors of an upcoming book. It's a book of essays, and it's called The Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who. So join us in welcoming Anthony, Jessica, and Christine. Welcome to the Happiness Show.
Thank you.
Yes,
yes.
So when is the book supposed to come out?
It's scheduled, anticipated for May of this year.
So that's pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, they're actually fast-tracking it because the publisher wants to sort of time it with the release of the 11th Doctor series.
Great, great. So tell me a little bit, Anthony, how you got involved with this. How did this whole thing start, and exactly, you know, when did it start?
Well, the process of it beginning is sort of all three of us are involved very intermittently about it. In August of 2008, I believe it was, right, Chris, Jess?
Yeah.
August of 2008, Christine, Jesse, and myself were part of a conference. We organized for a year a conference called MythCon, and it's the annual conference of the Mythopoeic Society. I think Tara's friends with the treasurer, Lisa Harrigan.
I think I know. Yes.
Yeah, she runs on Facebook. I don't know if you know each other personally.
No.
But we organized MythCon. They've been around for about 40 years, and they're a literary organization, and they're dedicated mostly around Tolkien and Inklet. They examine lots of different types of mythology and literary mythology.
Mm-hmm.
But long story short, I was the chair of that conference, Jesse was the programming coordinator, and Christine was the wonderful site liaison who organized everything because it took place at her college. She's she'll tell you herself, she's a professor at Central Connecticut State University. So after the conference was over, Jesse and I spent some time at her house catching up on some Doctor Who. And at the time, season 4, the 2000 revival, was airing. So we watched Stolen Earth, Journey's End, and I can let Christine and Jesse tell you how they're basically starting their essays, the chapters in the book that Christine and Jesse wrote.
Uh-huh.
The book came out of that. So they can tell you about their chapters and how they came about. But once they discussed those two things, the idea for their chapters, we had the bright idea of doing a whole-scale book on mythology and Doctor Who.
Oh, cool.
So
cool.
I can turn it over to them if that's what you wish about.
Sure, sure. Christine, wow. Your doctorate, you were telling us what your doctorate is earlier. Why don't you tell everybody exactly what your doctorate. We know that you're not a veterinarian.
Well, my PhD was actually in theoretical physics. My day job, if you will, actually my night job, is as a professor of astronomy and physics. And one of my loves is doing interdisciplinary work. I do a lot of work on science and society,
mm-hmm.
Science and science fiction, science and Tolkien. And I go to a lot of Tolkien conferences and do a lot of work like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the wonderful scholars in Tolkienia is Leslie Donovan, who's done work on the Valkyrie reflex, the symbolism of the Valkyrie among Tolkien's women characters. And when Jesse and I were watching these episodes of Doctor Who, after a few glasses of wine, maybe more just there was no pain felt in any of this, but it was a very academic conversation.
Right.
We were sort of arguing as to who fits the Valkyrie reflex better among the companions. And I was arguing for Rose.
Uh-huh.
And wrote our chapters taking the point of view of showing how our preferred companion of the new series
right.
best fit the Valkyrie reflex. And that's how the chapters were born. And as Anthony says, Anthony also has wonderful ideas about Doctor Who and scholarship. So he came up with his chapter. And then we put out a call for papers and sought other like-minded scholars who wanted to share their view of how mythology and Doctor Who blend together.
Wow. So tell me this. How many people have submitted to this? How many writers do we have on this?
There's nine. There's nine chapters.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chapter. Three chapters are by the editors, myself, Jessica, and Christine.
Right.
And then we have seven others. Six others. But there's also introductory material. The foreword
uh-huh.
is written by Simon Guerrier, as you may know, has written Doctor Who novels.
Right.
And the preface is written by Barnaby Edwards, the president of Doctor Who New York.
Right.
And so I would say, what is it, 9 or 10 overall?
Yeah, it depends on how you count the material. Definitely about a dozen good reflective pieces on Doctor Who and mythology.
So how did you enter a publisher on doing this?
Well, I'll take this one because Anthony keeps pointing at me. when we were talking about the different articles and, you know, we're several glasses of wine in, we came up with a little bit of a stumbling block, which was, who's going to publish this?
Right.
We don't know of many academic arenas, to talk about Doctor Who because there, as you said, there's fan fiction, there's all this other stuff. And so we decided to really poke around, and Anthony and I, and Christine as well, we're all academics in the form of Tolkien, in mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, and we've published individually, we've had things published, and Anthony and I had a contact with the author Ann Petty.
Okay.
We wrote a foreword for a collection that she did on Dragons of Fantasy. And we wanted to just poke her and ask some questions as to where could we send this idea. And then she told us that she was on the board of a publishing company. And then the remaining members of the board are all huge Doctor Who fans.
Oh, okay.
So we pitched them an idea, and they were absolutely thrilled and jumped at it.
So first of all, you've already been published, so it's not your first rodeo.
It's not. It's our first book.
It's the first book for Jesse and I. Christine also has her own books, which she can tell you about, like the biography of Stephen Hawking and her own book. So Jesse and I have published academic essays and contributed to journals and other books. But as in a full-length book, this is ours, our first
book. Oh, wow. Oh, well, congratulations. That's great. And so I guess it really helped also while you're pitching it to people who love Doctor Who. So that's a good thing, too.
Yeah. I can text you the link to their website, but the publisher is Kitsune Books,
mm-hmm.
and they are out of Florida, actually.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And one of the things that I like about, you know, I'll give a little plug for the publisher, is, and this is something that I've tried to do in my academic work, this idea that a lot of people have that academics is somehow really dry and boring.
Mm-hmm.
Kitsune has published academic works, but in a mainstream market. You're not going to see one of their academic books selling for, you know, $50 or $100, which a lot of academic presses do. So their books are really, you know, in the normal price range of a paperback, you know, $12 to $15.
Right.
And it sounds like something small, but it's a really huge thing because it attracts more people. They also deal with subjects that some other academic presses may look down their nose at.
Right, right.
But it's still, maybe because we come from the Tolkien area and...
Uh-huh.
Some areas in academia kind of don't think that it's valid, but when you start to get into other, like, issues of pop culture and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
it's part of my mission is to show those other dry, dusty areas of academia that these are really valid areas. In my essay, Christine and I did a two-part essay.
Uh-huh.
I'm dealing with Old Norse and Anglo-Saxon and relating it to Doctor Who.
I'm sorry, I had a little bit of a blip there. Old Norse and what?
Anglo-Saxon.
Okay.
And kind of, you know, and I had a lot of fun, you know, connecting the two and showing people that there's a precedent for what the writers in the new series have done. And, you know, maybe it points some people to some areas of literature that they might not have considered.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and, you know, watching Donna, who'd have thunk that she had, you know, connections to this great tradition? But, you know, I'm a geek, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's also, it must have been kind of difficult to, well Christine, have you always been a Doctor Who fan, or?
I was infected with the Who virus in graduate school.
In graduate school. That, you know, the time when you really should have been studying
that.
The most, so...
Yeah, well, actually, I knitted a Tom Baker scarf for a friend of mine in grad school, the one who infected me with the Who virus. And it was therapeutic knitting the scarf and, you know...
Oh, how fun is that? That's hilarious. So what was your first? I'll ask each of you, Christine. What was your first episode of Doctor Who?
Well, I know I watched them out of order. They were playing on our local public television,
uh-huh.
So it definitely would have been something in Tom Baker era, but uh-huh. I don't know which episode it would have been.
Oh wow, yeah. But Anthony and Jess, how did you guys get into Doctor Who in the first place?
Well, like I said earlier, I was born when uh-huh. The Curse of Peladon was airing.
Right.
My first remembrance scene that I remember very clearly
uh-huh.
is Sarah Jane and her mood ring, glowing hand of Eldred, hand of fear.
Eldred must live.
So, yeah, exactly. So I remember that very clearly, and my first, I remember actually from the early 80s, mid-80s, I remember the fundraisers the Gallifreyan uh-huh. Embassy was doing
right.
on Channel 21 here, WLIW.
Right there in New York.
Yep.
How very cool. You know, you can actually see some of that stuff on YouTube. Because,
you can see Lewis and Ken when they were both very, very young.
Yeah, exactly, funny. Which is really cool. And Lewis and Ken, Lewis Trapani and Ken Deep of Podshock, Doctor Who Podshock, which is a big influence here on the Happiness Patrol. And we love those guys to death. So, cool. Well, you know, the book sounds like it's going to be, you know, at first I thought, wow, academia, well, we'll see, you know, but then I'm thinking, like, golly, this might be a really fun and clever read, too, so I'm looking forward to it.
Sort of, I mean, I teach beginning, like, freshman English classes and writing classes.
Uh-huh.
And whenever I tell my students, you know, something, we're going to talk about academic stuff, their heads want to explode. But, you know, then I kind of tell them a little bit about what I do. And I said, you know, my husband and I just came out with a book. We're coming out with a book. It's on Doctor Who. And I tell them what it is. And they're like, but that's not academic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the discussion then turns to, well, what is academic?
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Something else I see in a lot of, like, we go to the Doctor Who New York meetups, and we've gone to a lot of Tolkien groups and things, and there seems to be a desire to divide fans from academics.
Uh-huh.
And but when we go to our academic conferences like MythCon, they're the biggest, geekiest fans around. And we're only doing, we're doing the things that fans have been doing for a long, long time.
Right.
But just bringing it into a different arena and showing the both academics that you can talk about these kinds of things I don't want to say more intelligent way, because I've had some amazing conversations with fans that are like really intelligent, comprehensive conversations. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like the two arenas think that they don't cross, and they do all the time.
Oh, how fun! How fun is that? Well, you know, Leela, our very own Leela, can contest to how she's taking a class right now. Leela, why don't you tell them about that?
Well, I'm taking a science fiction class at Utah Valley University. Oh my gosh, it's the best class in the world. I've never had a class like it. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic because we really do compare a lot of different science fictions, and, you know, I've learned a lot, which is, it's just been fantastic.
So, cool. So this book will be out in May sometime. We don't have an exact date. Is that correct?
No, I'm hoping to have one. Currently, we're doing some of the edits the publishers would like to see. I'm working on that. I was actually working on it prior. Christine and I were working on it prior to this, you know, chat we're doing here, and if it all stays on schedule, I should have a date by March, which that is when they want to start their big PR push for the book. We have cover art selected.
Woohoo!
Yeah. if you're on Facebook, I will give you a little hint. If you're on Facebook, the guy behind Andy's art, Doctor Who.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
And, are you familiar with the Facebook page?
I know Andy very well indeed. He's one of my best friends.
Okay, well, Andy is the artist for our cover.
So that's so cool. Do you want to tell everybody where they can go as far as if they want more information about this?
Well, Kitsune only has a small blurb on their website at the moment. Mm-hmm. If you go to Kitsune Books, if you pay attention closely in the next few weeks to kitsunebooks.com, you can do that. They'll have more official announcements there. But on Facebook, if you just search for the Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who, you can become a fan of the book on Facebook currently. And we're on Twitter. Mythic Doc Who, twitter.com/mythicdocwho. I regularly post information, and the Facebook page will have, you know, up-to-date information as I have it and can release it.
Uh-huh.
But when it's officially, you know, moving forward via the publisher, it'll be on kitsunebooks.com.
Cool. Well, Anthony, Jessica, Dr. Christine Larson, thank you so much for joining us here on the Happiness Patrol. And we can't wait. We can't wait to see when this book comes out. I'm very excited, as I'm sure Dale and Tara and Leela are. Right, gang?
Woohoo! Yeah.
Well,
thank you all for letting us be on here.
Thank you.
Sounds really, really good and really quite interesting, because it's nice to have an alternate view of somebody else's version of Doctor Who. You know, it's somebody else's view on it, and that's always brilliant, because, you know, Doctor Who tends to be a very personal thing. So seeing how other people have actually managed to integrate this and being able to talk about it on an academic level is brilliant.
Yeah.
And then, of course, one of my best friends is doing the artwork, so fantastic.
Well, that you've heard it first on Happiness Patrol. We haven't told anyone beyond you guys, actually.
Oh my God, we got a scoop.
Yeah.
have an exclusive.
I can't. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing that blows my mind. I can't believe we got information before Louis Trapani got it, because that man never sleeps.
I think he is actually asleep just at the moment. So,
Louis.
Yes, yes, Dale.
Sugar-free Jello blows your mind.
So anyway, speaking of taking trips, Tara and I are going to be taking a trip pretty soon here. When are you leaving? When are you leaving, Tara?
Well, I'm leaving ungodly early on Wednesday morning.
Ah.
I've got a bunch of people coming over today to help me pack up the TARDIS in its trailer.
Uh-huh.
And I've packed up the TARDIS's tea set already, so that's all set. I need to go make a booze run and get some hard cider.
Speaking of sweet.
So the serious packing will commence this afternoon, but we're not actually leaving until the ass crack of dawn on Wednesday morning.
Wow. So if you don't know what I'm speaking of, we're going to Galley. We're going to Gallifrey 1. It's the big Doctor Who convention in L.A. They have it every year this time of year. Last year they had it a little earlier in February. And
next year they're going to have it a little earlier again on my birthday, because they should have it every year on my birthday.
Oh, how nice. So it's Gallifrey 2010, Gallifrey 1, Blackjack 21. There's all kinds of guests that are going to be there, like Sarah Sutton, Katie Manning. Georgia Moffat is the big name guest, I guess I would say. Other than a lot of other people who are always convention favorites, like Fraser Hines and Annika Wills and John Levine is actually going to be there, and Nicholas Briggs.
Woo!
I cannot wait to see him.
Finally get to meet Nicholas Briggs.
That'll be so cool. That'll be very cool. And basically. If you've never been, it is really a sight to see all these wonderful Doctor Who nerds like us in one place and
communing. It is unlike any other convention. I mean, the way they used to have Doctor Who conventions in the 80s, the fan-run conventions, they were very friendly, they were very small, and you could hang out with the guests and have a drink with them, and it was a lot of fun. And Galley is just like that, only it's huge. I mean, it's over 1,000 people.
It's pretty big.
But you still will get to interact with the guests, which you can't do at any other convention that I know of. I mean, you go to the bar, and pretty much everybody will be hanging out in the bar, those who aren't in the hot tub.
We're going to be there Saturday. Saturday around 11, I believe. We're going to do a setup around the TARDIS and have Leela and Dale Skype in, and we'll get to talk to people, and hopefully we'll interact and have some fun. That'll be great. Hopefully we're going to have a bunch of interviews with a bunch of different people, famous and semi-famous and not so famous, you know, just fans. It's, you know, here at the Happiness Patrol, we're all about, you know, the whole fandom of Doctor Who, and we love, I particularly love getting inside everybody's head and finding out exactly why they like Doctor Who in the first place. It's a great thing, because everybody has a unique and interesting story. So we're going to be doing a lot of that at the convention. And but Tara, you mentioned there's going to be a podcast there, doing a live podcast out of the hot tub.
Yeah, I can't remember which one of the guys has booked the hot tub, but they're going to be broadcasting live from the hot tub. I can't remember which one who's going to be up on that, but somebody is.
I met Tara last year at Gallifrey 1 and during the convention, and it's because we both had built TARDISes, and she had her beautiful TARDIS there, and I was immediately, it was like a magnet. It just pulled me straight to it, and so I kept looking at the different measurements and such of the TARDIS parts and pieces, and going, okay, that looks good. Yeah, that looks right. Yeah. So that's how we met, and we hit it off. So that's a good thing.
Well, see, we've been corresponding on the TARDIS Builders Guild, which, to bring this full circle, Dale started. So
no,
Dale,
TARDIS Rebuilders,
which Dale started, which Dale founded. So he's essentially the godfather of both of our TARDISes.
Yes, he is.
So we had been corresponding on that forum about building our TARDISes. And we got to meet for the first time and hit it off. And Uncle Lou took his video camera and had a little tour of my TARDIS. And I told him all the stories that had happened with it that week. And that's on YouTube if you want to have a look at that, which is
we may have to post a link to that when we post this episode up. So also it's like the thing about Galley, because it's so big, their program is just so amazing because they have all kinds of different things going on. Costumers galore. If you go, every convention has, a few people, in costume, but they have one night where it's their masquerade, which is absolutely phenomenal, because it's not really a masquerade per se, but everybody gets up on stage with their costume and they do a little skit, stuff like that, and boy, it's really fun. And
the costumers bring their A game to Gallifrey.
Oh, they damn sure do.
I've seen several costumes there that were over $1,000, and several of them that were several thousand dollars worth of hard work and actual cash spent on these costumes. Mm-hmm. So you will see some amateur level, but then you will see some professional quality costumes, and they're very exciting.
Yeah, all of them are very fun. Last year when we saw the white robot.
The white robot may show up this year. We never know when the white robot is going to show up.
That'll be good. That was a wonderful costume. It wasn't really, what was great about it is that you could tell it was mainly cardboard.
It was
an amateur costume, but it was fantastically done. And that's why I like it, because, like you said, there's like dresses and things that are just like, these people spent tons of money on. And then there's these cardboard things that are like, done correctly, they just look great. They just look absolutely fun, and so that's a really cool thing. That's a very cool thing. And also being able to sit at the bar and see some of your favorite character actors come in from Doctor Who and just order a drink, it's like Tara said, it's great to be able to go up to these people and actually and mingle with them. It's really cool, very cool. And it looks like, speaking of mingling, they have this thing that's new. I don't know if you saw this, Tara. It's called the
Casterbus Coffee Clatch.
Oh, the Casterbus Coffee Clatches. Yay. So, and it says, according to the Gallifrey One website, Gallifrey One will be bringing a new feature to our convention starting this year with this year's events. These small informal gatherings are modeled on similar events at other conventions. It's a chance to have more FaceTime with selected guests and is in a much more intimate setting over a cup of coffee or hot tea. Click on the link below for more information.
Yeah. The polite thing is that they're trying to introduce a venue that doesn't have alcohol in it. I know several people are going to be smuggling in little flasks to pour in their tea, so it's not going to be an alcohol. But the coffee clutch idea, I'm all in favor of it. I don't know how it's gonna go over. I know that we have a tea party that goes kind of continuously around the TARDIS, or the TARDIS that I'm bringing, and all of the knitters hang out there. There's a group of knitters from Ravelry.com who call themselves the Ravelers of Rassilon.
And, oh my God!
Yeah, and
I love that.
Donating a charity scarf to be auctioned off this year. And pretty much everybody just hangs out at the TARDIS and sits around and knits and compares notes and critiques each other's scarves in a gentle and friendly way. So it is. We're not going to be nasty if you want to bring your scarf by and get some advice. And so that's where all the knitters are going to be hanging out.
That is true. That is true. I was amazed at how many knitters were there, and I was also amazed at the variety of stuff that they knit, which was really great.
Oh, yeah.
So, it looks like there's going to be a live band on Friday night, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're called, what are they called? They are called, not Gamble with Time. What does it say? It doesn't say.
I don't know, but Uncle Lou, will you please bring your guitar, please?
I am not going to have enough room on the plane to bring my guitar.
Oh, come on.
That's what's happening. And plus, I'm going to be running around with my recorder trying to, get interviews with people. Drunken interviews with people, so I don't know how it's gonna work, but I'm gonna try.
I severely hope that they've actually got. Oh dear God! I'm severely hoping they get rid of one of the things that's been a problem for British Doctor Who conventions since the 90s.
What's that?
That?
Body odor.
Body odor.
Oh, God. Well, hopefully like every convention, you got your good and your bad. Now, last year, I have to say, in the opposite direction from body odor, I was quite stunned that Phil Collinson was wearing enough.
Again with the Phil Collinson story.
Oh my God, that man smelled magnificent. What was that cologne he was wearing? Oh my God.
It was Armani.
Armani. He had this cloud of Armani around him. And
I don't blame you. It probably fends off the other germs.
Oh, well, he was lovely. He came over and he had a look at the TARDIS, and I got my picture taken with him. And my husband and I went home, or we went to the place where we were staying, and my husband came up next to me and said, "You smell like Armani." And everybody I talked to said, "Yeah, did you get your picture taken with Phil Collinson? Yeah, do you smell like Armani for a couple of hours?" Yeah,
sure
it's great.
Now. So, okay, well, here's the name of the band that's going to be. It's like Friday night. They're called Tanuki Sweet Riot. And it says they're a local L.A. band, which has played various conventions and anime events here in California. We'll be joining us Friday night at 8 p.m. in our main ballroom. Tanuki Sweet Riot is well known for their covers of video game themes and television theme songs. And they're diehard sci-fi fans and Doctor Who fans, too. They'll be bringing their own interpretations of theme songs of Doctor Who, Red Dwarf, and much more to our main stage for our first ever live band performance at Gallifrey One. I don't know what to think about that. I have a feeling that, you know, because I'm a big time music snob, and I don't know. I don't know. I hope I like it, or else you'll hear about it. So.
That's why I keep telling you. I keep telling you to bring your guitar, Uncle Lou, because I've been talking to Daphne Ashbrook's sweetie, and he might be bringing his guitar, and we might have a little jam session over by the TARDIS. So.
Well, what'll happen, I know how that happens, it's basically going to be like, I know that one, let me see your guitar, and I'll play, and they'll go, oh, no, let me see that, you know, that's the way it was when we were 13, so, and only one of us could afford a guitar, so, so anyway, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. There's so many things, and if you haven't been to one of these before, there's still tickets available, and if you're in the LA area, you can actually, you know, just go for, you know, one day. You don't have to go for the entire weekend.
Don't let the size of it scare you, because I've talked to a lot of people who say, "Oh, I'm a little frightened to go to Gallifrey because it's over 1,000 people." It really doesn't break down like that. You end up in little cliques, and you go and you see this, and you go and you see that, and the only time that you're going to see everybody in one place is like for the costume contest or the opening
ceremonies or the closing ceremonies too. I mean, well, mainly the opening. Yeah.
The rest
of
the time, everybody's off doing their own little thing, and it's you get to hang out with people and actually talk to people, and you're not shoved from one event to the next. So
that's true.
I highly recommend it.
Absolutely, and it's at the LAX Marriott in LA. Go to the Gallifrey One website at www.gallifreyone.com, and you'll get a lot more information than we can possibly give you here at the time allowed. So,
come up and say hi. We'll be hanging out at the TARDIS.
Oh, absolutely. You can come and meet the Happiness Patrol in person. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. It'll be happy. Right, Dale? Dale?
Yes, I'm
yes, right. Pick of the week, pick of the week. Hey, everybody, it's the pick of the week. Okay, so, Dale?
Don't start with me. I'm still apologizing to our guests for you singing.
Oh, that's right. You know what we can do here on the pick of the week, since we do have guests, and I try to be as gentlemanly as possible here on the Happiness Patrol. Thank you, Dale.
Really? When?
Yes. Cue the crickets. So we're gonna let Anthony start with his pick of the week, and then we'll go with Jessica, and then Christine. You can tell us all about yours, since you mentioned it a little earlier. We'll save it for a little bit here. So Anthony, pick of the week. What should people be watching?
Well, Jesse's saying don't pick mine. Okay. Well, I have A couple of things. We've been watching a lot of Doctor Who, and we actually watched the two Peter Cushing films recently. And, you know, not for nothing, a lot of people kind of, I guess, you know, I don't know, raise their nose at some of that stuff, but we'll trash them. But I actually love them as really good, independent, standalone. You know, there's a lot of references, like, from Dalek Invasion of Earth into the, some of the new series and, you know, some of the, you know, classic Who that we're used to. So I'm going to go with, the, you know, the two Peter Cushing films that you should watch back-to-back as we did, Doctor Who and the Daleks, and Dalek Invasion Earth 2150, because they're just really a lot of fun, good, you know, 60s science fiction, but, you know, you see, so you can, if you're aware of any of the, you know, stories today, new series or, you know, classic series, there are a number of connections that you can put, especially some of the things we've heard about the 11th Doctor. So I'm going to go with the two Peter Cushing films.
Oh, how
what
cool.
A brilliant choice.
You know, if anything other than seeing Daleks in Technicolor, you know, it's totally worth it. And Peter Cushing, you know, playing the Doctor. Well, you know, it's pretty interesting. But, man, I tell you, that whole Technicolor thing and the opening of the first film, oh, man, I love that title opening. I love that.
You
I like
need
that
to be stoned to watch it.
Or just feel like
oh, wait,
a kid.
Did I say that? I'm sorry.
That's your out loud voice.
You're on the happiness patrol now, Anthony. Anything.
I got very happy. Yes. And that you definitely have what Jesse terms Liberace Daleks for being so colorful.
Liberace Daleks.
Bernard Cribbins is in Dalek Invasion Earth.
He is indeed.
So that's the reason to see it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. So Jessica, he didn't pick your pick of the week, did he?
No, because I told him not to, and because he fell asleep when we were watching it, but he'd already seen it before. Genesis of the Daleks.
Genesis of the Daleks.
Yeah.
Ah, Sarah Jane.
I enjoyed it. Anthony said that we had watched it before and that I fell asleep, but I don't remember any of it at all.
That's because you were asleep.
But it was something that I was, you know, I really enjoyed it and wound up watching all six parts all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, was up until about 3 a.m. it was my first recollection of Doctor Who was Tom Baker, and I don't remember which episode. But I know it was around this time because there were like little moments here or there that I, you know, got deja vu and like I remember seeing that before. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of the first episodes that I'd ever watched.
Oh wow, how cool! That's a pretty good one too. That was a good one.
I had that on a record. I had the audio version of that on a record.
The LP, my God!
What
do you remember that? God, I was in junior high. I had that. Oh, I loved that thing.
I had the record. I had a very yellow color cover.
Yep.
I'm going to have to go on eBay now, start looking for that. So.
Genesis is very interesting because it's one of two times. I mean, it's the first version of the second Dalek history. So Terry Nation has completely rewritten Dalek history by this point.
Right.
But it's one of only two appearances where Davros is actually scary or useful.
Well, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Dale, but that's also the first time the Daleks appear in Tom Baker's series. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember watching that, and I was thinking, what in the hell are these things?
It was scary.
It had a very dark feel to it because of the way the lighting was also, you know.
And because of the large amount of allusions to Nazis.
Well, I mean, dead people in trenches. I mean, I remember watching that serial going, wow, yeah. Okay, that's really pushing the envelope for Doctor Who. I mean, they're at one point they're
absolutely
rifling through dead bodies to grab gas masks off of.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And Sarah Jane was quite the pistol in that.
Oh,
one, so.
Stop it! The minute that nice lady said, "Oh yeah, Genesis of the Daleks," she went, "Ooh, Sarah
Jane." Yeah.
So we all know what you're doing. So stop it, you grotty little man.
Well.
Has anybody ever listened to the Big Finish audio "I Davros" that's supposed to precede that story?
No, I haven't heard that yet. Oh, wow.
Vaguely, a very long time ago.
If I can just plug that real quick, I Davros is almost like an I Claudius, but with Davros, and it's just phenomenal to learn the history of Davros and how he got to that point.
Oh, yeah. It's Terry, isn't it? Terry Malloy.
Yes, it is. And he's phenomenal in there.
Yeah, I have heard it, and you're right. It's a very, very good story.
Now I'm getting...
It's as dark as Tara was describing the darkness of Genesis of the Daleks. This is just as dark, if not darker.
Yeah, woo! Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. It's a very, very cleverly done story as well. Writing Davros' backstory.
So, Andre, I have to tell you one of our dear listeners, faithful listeners. Yes, Andre from New York. Actually, he emailed us at our Gmail account and said, you know what? You wanted feedback? I'll give you feedback. My pick of the week is Destiny of the Daleks. Yes, that's Andre. So thank you.
I love you, Andre. I love you, Andre. I love you to bits.
Thank you, Andre.
On that.
Dale, why are you laughing so hard about that one?
Because it's one of the most atrocious pieces of shit in the history of Doctor Who.
Dale.
I like the fact that K-9's gone wrong. Again, laryngitis. What do you need it for? Romana's regeneration.
See, I'm getting my Dalek stories confused. Destiny is the one with Romana too. Yes, that's the one you love, Dale.
Yes,
sorry,
with the pink jacket. The pink jacket. I love that pink jacket.
And
what I said, Andre.
Well, I kind of like
this under a pillar reading The Origins of the Universe by Oolong Kalufid, and you can tell that Douglas Adams is the scriptwriter because of that reference alone. But the Daleks are abysmal. Davros looks like he's trying to body pop in his chair because he can't pedal the damn thing fast enough. And because it's a reused mask, Davros's nose keeps wobbling when he talks.
I can't take it seriously
because his nose keeps wobbling.
I'm going to have to go rewatch that. Oh, my gosh. So, what about the robots? Nobody mentioned the other robot race.
Yeah, we try not to mention the Vovellans because, frankly, they're just embarrassing.
But they certainly do have like tight outfits, don't you think?
They're like drunk aunts at parties with families. You just leave them in the corner and don't mention them.
They're escapees from Rick, the disco guy.
Oh.
Rick James!
Yes.
The planet of Rick James!
Yeah. The planet of Rick James has invaded the Daleks.
Oh, yes.
That's very funny.
That's it. You've nailed it right there.
That's it. So, Christine, with that, give us your pick of the week.
Well, I decided to think a little large, especially for people who have lots of time on their hands. Uh-huh. And, you know,
we don't know anybody like that.
I would recommend that people go back and revisit all of the John Pertwee episodes. I think that people just don't give them enough credit. And he really, I have a special place in my heart for him. Sort of the Doctor is James Bond. And the three Doctors. I think that's probably, if you have to just watch one of the episodes, I would say go back and watch the three Doctors, The interplay between the three of them is marvelous, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Well, I love John Pertwee. I was actually my pick of the week was almost going to be Carnival of Monsters, but I realized that I hadn't seen it in quite a while, and I didn't want to get Dale.
It usually helps, Lewis.
Yes, it does. Yes, it usually helps. But I like that. I like that one a lot. But you're right. It was so funny to see the Doctor as portrayed as this James Bond-like character. It was very fun. Him karate chopping and everything. He's so great. And what is that episode where he's like, I think it was the Green Death.
When he gets
up on the roof and the guard goes, "What are you gonna do, old man?" He goes, "I'll show you how much life this old man has in him." And he karate chops his ass, and it's really funny.
I'm pretty spry for my age. Yeah, actually.
That's the line. Yeah. So yeah, John Pertwee. What a wonderful man. What a great doctor. You know, he will sorely be missed. The only doctor that I know of with tattoos.
He was an awful lot of fun at conventions.
We're not going down that one again, are we? Please?
No, we're not going on that one. But I will tell you my pick of the week, and I just watched it this morning, actually. I watched it again because I was thinking, We're getting ready
for
Gallifrey.
I haven't watched any Doctor Who, and I'm going to get told off again.
That, and we're getting ready for Galley. And this one has the Doctor's Daughter in it, Miss Georgia Moffat, and the name of it is The Doctor's Daughter, and it was absolutely great. I hadn't seen it in a while, and I was thinking, wow, you know, this is really good. What's great about it is it's classic old Doctor Who, you know. The Doctor goes to a planet, you know, the TARDIS is out of control, goes to a planet, he doesn't know what's going on, and boom, he finds himself in the middle of, like, some sort of conflict, you know, with the, you know, like a warring faction and stuff. But what's great about it to me is you got Martha Jones, and you got Donna, and you've got the Doctor, and they're great with each other. Even though Martha is sort of like, you know, put out on her own for most of the story, but that's cool too because you really see Martha sort of like come from like a companion into more of a heroic figure, you know, trying to do this. And Donna was great simply because you see her use her brain, you know. And I like that. You see Donna actually thinking on her own and getting stuff. And probably the best thing about it, to me, is the fact that you get more insight on the Doctor's family and his background and how he feels about that. And it's revealed in that story that he actually he did fight in the Time War. And he did kill people and such. And you know, you don't think of your hero as doing that, but yeah, he did, and you can tell that he's really the way David Tennant played it was just fantastic. It was great, so I liked it. I liked it, and of course, you know, at least I mentioned, you know, Georgia Moffat. She was so much fun, and so she just brought a sparkle to that character that was just, you know.
That's a new term for it, Lou. She brought a sparkle to the character. What a lovely way to put it.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Dale. So
it's a good story. It's a really good story. And it is, you're absolutely right, it is terribly old-fashioned Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. With the TARDIS, you don't know where it's going to land and everything going wrong. The only problem I have with it is the problem I have with most of the last season.
What's that?
Donna.
Donna?
Well, yeah, but
no!
The reason... Hang on, shut up and listen. Dear
thank
God,
you, Dale.
The problem is Donna should have had a whole season on her own with the Doctor. She was that good a character.
I understand what you're saying.
But she is squeezed in with Rose and Martha and every other bugger that turns up. And, you know, the Doctor's daughter in this one, although she's very good. Georgia Moffat is fantastic as the Doctor's daughter. But at the same time, Donna didn't have room to breathe and didn't have room to grow as a character. So she was stuck in that horrible little pigeonhole of the underused companion. And that's what gets me about most of the season.
Well, in that episode, I have to disagree. I thought she really came out on her own in that episode because, you know, she figures out the whole date code thing. And,
well, she does.
She's
always clever.
Yeah, she was very,
she
very clever.
She doesn't get a chance to shine on her own, literally. It should have been. I mean, best example, Unicorn and the Wasp.
Uh-huh.
It's her and the Doctor.
Right.
And that's what it should have been for a whole season. No Rose, no Sarah, no
right,
K-9,
right.
No Martha. It should have just been Rose, no, get rid of her. Glad she's gone. Oh, sorry. Donna and the Doctor
yeah.
For a whole season.
Yes.
It would have worked
yeah.
So well.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it would have been even harder to see her go if it had been that way. But I really enjoyed this episode. And but, you know, what kind of sucked is they tease you that, you know, oh, man, you know, she's actually going to become part of the TARDIS crew. That'll be cool. But then, you know, she dies, but she doesn't die. And then, like, at the end of it, they seem to, like, you know, put this whole thing in, like, there's going to be another spinoff. You know, there's
going to
be this great spinoff. And it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. And boy, I tell you, talk about like something that I'd watch, you know, every week. Hell yeah. And I'm sure all of us would. but I tell you, that was a little disappointing too. So hopefully at Galley somebody will be able to. I'm sure somebody's going to be asking, you know, whatever happened to the spinoff of the Doctor's Daughter? Why didn't Jenny become her own, you know, female Doctor Who. So, but anyway, that's mine. Dale. Tell me your pick of the week, Dale.
I'm stuck between two Doctor Who's this week.
What a crazy place to be.
I know, it's quite fun. It's David Tennant and David Tennant 2. It's a fantastic place to be. Anyway, sorry. The first one that I'm stuck between is First Doctor. It's The War Machines, which is not long out on DVD. And cleaned up, it looks absolutely glorious. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's a brilliant story. Votan is brilliant. The War Machines, for what they are a fantastic concept. And Hartnell is really at the height of his power as the Doctor. He is stunningly good. And then the second one... Actually, there's a really good feature out on the War Machines DVD about how they put together the episodes from various sources and little joining shots they had to stick in there. And it's called Assembling Votan, and it's a fantastic little extra. So if you get a chance to see it, do. Second one... Fourth Doctor, The Mask of Mandragora.
Oh.
When Mandragora swallows the moon. Brilliant. Absolutely, I love it to bits.
That's
that scarf's
just
got a bit short,
on
though.
DVD, right? Has it come out on DVD yet?
Just.
In the UK? Just. Okay. Because we've just ordered it here in the States, so we've got a while to wait yet. But it's been announced, so.
I've got it. I've bought it. And it's brilliant. I absolutely love it. There's a whole thing on the TARDIS.
Oh, cool.
Which is really, really nice. And it's got Barry Newbury, who designed the Newbury prop, of course, and all the rest of it, and all the console rooms, and Christopher H. Bidmead's in it. And I don't like him. And all sorts of other stuff. But the story itself is brilliantly done.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't watched that in so long. I just remember bits and pieces of it.
Such a great story. I absolutely adore that story.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and say something that my pick of the week is based partially on something that will also relate to Dale's pick of the week with Mask of Mandragora, because the mask from Mask of Mandragora is going up on the auction block this week at Bonham's Auction House is auctioning off a bunch of Doctor Who props, and that mask is one of the things. They're also auctioning off several Daleks, they're auctioning off several Cybermen, and they're auctioning off two cheetah suits from my pick of the week, which is the Seventh Doctor episode, Survival. Once again, the story has got huge holes in it, but Sylvester's just acting his damn heart out. He's just, he's got, what little
holes
there is.
In it? Holes? You could drive the bus from Planet of the Dead through that.
Yes.
Oh, my God!
You watch Sylvester, and he is just going to town, and he's got that bit between his teeth, and he is just running. And it's got Anthony Ainley, my dear Uncle Ant, his last official appearance.
Oh, yes. He was glorious.
Oh, it's so
I really
much
wish they hadn't turned him into vampire cat version, though.
Oh, I laughed so hard. I talked to him after that was filmed, and he said he had so much fun running around with those teeth, walking around smiling at people.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. So, wow. So, Survival, I have to go. That's on DVD for sure, and I have to go.
No, I'm afraid you're going to have to tell me.
Is it not?
I think it's on DVD. Hold on. Yeah, no, it is out. Is it? I'm sorry. It is out.
Yeah,
it is out.
I was thinking so. Yeah, I was thinking that like a lot of the, I think most of the Seventh Doctor is available on DVD now, isn't it?
No,
that's because there are
already
like 12 stories.
Yeah,
it's sort of pick and choose. Mm. I can step over here and tell you which ones are out if you'd like me to.
Well, first we're gonna have little Miss Leela come on and tell us about Leela's pick of the week.
Well, my pick of the week this time I think is gonna be Partners in Crime. And
good story.
I love it. It's such a just a nice lighthearted episode, and I love Donna in it. She's so funny. I don't know what else.
Oh, go on. Tell me that your favorite scene is the window, the Doctor and Donna window scene.
Yes.
That is just.
It doesn't matter how many times I watch it, I burst out laughing.
Yeah. Well, it's great. That's such a great episode because, you know, the last time you see Donna is in her runaway bride thing. And, you know, I didn't really care for the character in that, you know. I mean, she was all right, but Jesus, I kept thinking, what a bitch. But I thought she was just absolutely really, really, really brilliant in this one because, you know, you can see her. She's sort of like, she's searching and she's coming of age, sort of.
It's the end of that window scene, you know, where they're mouthing each other through the windows and they just look over at Matron Cophelia and she just goes, "Am I interrupting you?" And it's just the way she says it. I cannot stop laughing when she says that. That woman is just so arch.
The matron.
Whatever her damn name is.
He was right. I thought he said Cthulhu.
No.
Cthulhu. No, Cophelia. That would be funnier.
That would be. That would change the story drastically, I believe.
Let's have lots of many tentacled monsters in Doctor. Oh no, we already had that. The Claws of Axos.
So okay, so we've had our pick of the week. So man, that ought to be enough to keep anybody busy. You know, pick your favorite, and go with it. You know, if it's Destiny of the Daleks. You know, if you happen to like,
frankly, it shouldn't be
robots from the planet Rick James. You know, or any new Who. You know, so go out and have fun. That's what it's all about. So that's about all the time we have now for this edition of the Happiness Patrol. Anybody who's going to Gallifrey 1 in L.A. On the February 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th, we'll see you there. Tara and I will both be there representing the Happiness Patrol.
Yeah,
and
so look for the 9-foot blue box, okay? There'll be two of them, and if we're not by one, we're at the other one.
Yes, absolutely. And so we look forward to joining you and seeing you guys there. And I want to make a special note of thanking our guests today. It's been an absolute hoot to have you guys on. Anthony Burge, Ms. Jessica Burke, and Dr. Christine Larson. Thank you so much. And thank you, Dale. Make sure you guys go and check out their book, The Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who. It's actually a group of essays, and it's going to be out sometime in May. But in the meantime, you can go on Facebook and search for it. And who knows, they may even let you join as a friend. How about that? So.
Well, yeah, definitely. We're friendly people. Sometimes.
So.
And you call yourself Doctor Who fans? How dare you?
and speaking of the interweb, you can follow the Happiness Patrol right here. We've got our own blog. Leela, tell them what the blog is.
Our blog is thehappinesspatrol.blogspot.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thehpatrol.
That's right, and you can also email us if you like at the.happiness.patrol@gmail.com.
Actually checked this week.
I checked it. So make sure that you write us. Let us know what you think about the show. Any kind of constructive criticism is good criticism, Dale. Right. So.
Really? My constructive criticism would be that there shouldn't be a Dale Who song.
Anyway, I'm Lewis B.
I'm Tara W.
I'm Leela S.
And I'm Dodo Chaplet.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you later. Take care. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. You've been listening to the Happiness Patrol. We hope you enjoyed your stay. Come again soon. Thanks for calling. Goodbye now. Lewis?
Yes, sir?
My life is weird shit enough already. Right, should we have an Uncle Lou song instead? Let's record a really nasty, evil Uncle Lou song.
Yeah,
once upon a time in a land far, far away, there was a man called Lewis. Hello. Lewis wasn't very good with technology, but Lewis still tried to build police telephone boxes that could travel in time.
Well, you know, a guy's got a dream.
One day, the Angel of Destiny came to see Lewis and slapped him for being useless. The end.
Christine. Christine, there she is. And don't even get me started about the TARDIS. I can't. Mum is the word. I can't.
Yeah, he was giggling. He's stopped now.